A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Weekly podcast where we guide you through all the big and most interesting things that have happened over on Red Men and the world of Liverpool Football Club this week. First and foremost, on the Biased Football podcast, myself, Chris, Dan and Chloe decided to react to the heavy links around Manchester United and England manager Gareth Southgate. Southgate's got the second best win percentage of any England manager ever. Weirdly enough, better than Ramsey's, albeit I think with like 40 odd games different. Fabio Capello's got the best win rate of any England manager. But again, handed out because England fans don't know what they really want. Because again, it's that lack of understanding because it's win or nothing. Anyone see that Evertonian tweeted about the other day, like having a chat with the mates about like what's football about when Man United can go and spend 70% of their 1 billion turnover and Everton are limited to doing 70% of 180 million or whatever? What's the point of football? And someone went, it's going and having a laugh with your mates and going and experience it and just and living for the footy. Most teams don't get off the success. England have no understanding of that, of like, it's just something to do in the summer, isn't it?
You're right. But for every fan of every club, pretty much from the Championship down, this is their big thing where they might have a chance of winning a fucking something major. Because they don't have that in their, you know, 50 game season or whatever it is.
Let's be honest, for most of them, it's a chance for them to go out on the ale in the summer that they didn't normally have. And the longer England go, the more they've got, and they give them an excuse to go out for 2 days instead of the one day if England win a fucking final. Like, I mean, that's where, particularly the ones.
It's a break from Benidorm as well. It's a fallow season, isn't it, when the international come on?
Yeah. But the Southgate stuff, I just think, is wild because, like, yeah, this imaginary manager is going to come in and do more. Cool. Some great managers had some great. I've had great players over the years, and you know, and less good managers have done more with. You know, I'm not sure how many people thought Teddy Venables was necessarily the cream of the crop or whatever in the 90s. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong. But the
The other thing. I think England fans seem to think that you should have the best manager. It's not historically a thing. Is it the best managers? A club football?
Yeah, certainly nowadays, more than ever, I would say. Yeah, absolutely. He's not the holy grail anymore in international management at all.
So, speaking of the step over from international to club management,
I think he'd be a great manager.
Gareth Southgate leads Manchester United's wish list, Ineos's wish list as next manager.
Incredible manager, always rated him.
Chloe Bloxham.
I just thought it was to be a part of sorting out Man United. I didn't know it was out and out to be their next manager.
Oh, yeah. The Messiah, Gaza.
I mean, can I have both of them together? A match of Southgate and Eric Ten Hag?
Steve McLaren still works at Manchester United, so maybe he'll stay around.
Maybe. He could be the interpreter because he speaks Dutch as well.
Yeah, of course, there you go. I think they should probably stop shopping at Wish and go back to Amazon, to be honest with you, it's not very
good. Can we just say that, like, you know, the managerial merry-go-round is kicking off in full effect. Manchester United obviously still have Ten Hag. You know, he's not guaranteed to get sacked. But there's going to be a lot of clubs looking for new managers this summer. We're in that. And the idea that Manchester United are not in the running for
anyone that Liverpool are in contention for. It's brilliant for a start. Yeah. The idea that it could be Gareth Southgate
is excellent.
Oh,
I mean, I've just listened to you talk about how he's an all right international manager, and I think he's dreadful. Like, I don't like him as a manager. I think he's far too safe, and maybe that actually is good for Manchester United. Maybe that's what they need. But no, I don't, a club football, especially at Manchester United. I'd love it if he went there. If he wants to, I'm all for that. I'm just going to give you the hint out. The fact that Liverpool probably aren't looking at Gareth Southgate probably means that you shouldn't either, Manchester United.
Well, the fact that all four of us universally say he would be a great fit for Manchester United suggests that it might not be a great appointment.
We were talking about this the other day in somewhere, I think it was an airport, and Steve made a fantastic point. Is managers are judged by their signings. Mm. How do you judge Gareth Southgate, and how do you look at him and think he's going to be a great signing?
Do we think
good point.
That like this is one of, I mean, look, Kobe Mayne, who we saw it first hand, brilliant footballer, but like there is a little bit of like Southgate's doing something smart here by getting this kid in, because he's actually almost demonstrating to the United owners, oh look, how well I'm handling this kid's the future of that team, and I'm building a bond with him and all this kind of stuff. Like
the Harry Kane connection as well, can he prize him out of Bayern?
I mean, no, but the
he got Luke Shaw to score in a Euros final as
did,
well.
Second minute,
so you know.
Yeah,
still lost that game though, didn't he?
But it's mad, isn't it? Because by all accounts, like there should be nothing wrong with that. Like Manchester United is a good job, but it's not. They're not at the pinnacle of football right now. Southgate has done a good job as England manager. It's just that, he doesn't have the club pedigree to back it up. But it's funny, if he won the Euros with England, would that be?
Enough.
That's a good. That's not a bad. I can't even say it. It would be fucking brilliant if they got Gareth Southgate as manager.
Do you think England's winning the Euros?
I don't think. I don't know.
They definitely could.
They absolutely can.
They've got brilliant players.
Yeah, but Southgate is probably the thing that's stopping them, which isn't a great recommendation.
But you get to a final. You've been to the final. You get to a final, and then players can get it over the line there. And
there's enough match winners there. You look at Bellingham, Foden, obviously mentioned Harry Kane. There's enough quality there. But the fact, again, one of the things that we keep coming back to is the reason as to why they won't win it is Gareth Southgate suggests that he might not be great at what he does.
If you can teach a team to defend and defend well, and then you can...
This is Harry Maguire, though.
No, but Harry Maguire, if you just ask him to edge stuff and kick stuff, he's fine. He'll do that. Harry Maguire's good for England. That's why I don't... It really annoys me, like, people going mad on Harry Maguire. Like, I mean, he's never been a £80 million centre-half. No. That's not his fault. But I've seen him play for England, and I thought he was an absolutely fine centre-half. He's never in Virgil's class or whatever, but, again, you don't get that at international level. Not in England.
But again, you get to a final. Let's say they play in France. Let's live in that world for a minute. In the final, you're not coming up against, to go back to it, Malta, Slovenia again. And Harry Maguire feels fine in those games, but when that step up in class comes about and Kylian Mbappe is running in behind Harry Maguire or at Harry Maguire, that's a problem.
But France have got their strengths and weaknesses
as well.
Who would
he pick over that?
John Stones is in there. Braithwaite,
Dunk is not the answer. But that Brantford situation
is
one of them whereby he's called him up for the sake of calling him up. It's a box ticking exercise for him. Didn't play him. Interest in him.
Who else have they got at centre half?
Conte came on it right
surely
back.
Surely John Stones plays.
Yeah, John Stones plays. It's John Stones and Maguire. I mean, that's Tyrone Mings was in the conversation a year ago. You know, it's
injured, Tomorrow,
it should be Gomez, but it probably won't be.
The other thing I would say is what we've mentioned here, right, is how, you know, in the England camps, it seems like there's no aggravation or anything. Gareth Southgate at Manchester United, where the players just do whatever they want.
It goes back to that point of it's his pedigree thing, and Manchester United fans have got to buy in. And they might do, because there might be some Man United fans who might love England, and that might be actually quite a good appointment for them somehow. Particularly the Euros thing might actually carry a lot of weight. But if it doesn't work out in a short spell, he's just people. Too many people know him as he's lovely. He's like a really nice guy. Speaks really well. He does know his football, and he's been central. He's been more than England manager. He's helped shape England, like they're off the pitch. You know what I mean? And how they've managed to get themselves back to being a reasonably competitive force over the last decade or so.
But Man United fans, I just don't think they'll just remember him as the guy who missed in Euro 96 and then did the Pizza Hut advert and, you know, and all that kind of shite, because that's the kind of embarrassing stuff that comes up after a while. He doesn't strike me as a powerful Manchester United manager. I'm just hoping it's another one of these where Jim Ratcliffe and that have met him and think he's a nice guy, and, you know, it's like the old boys club kind of thing might get him the job. That'd be fucking brilliant. Fucking brilliant. He's hoping anyway.
So do we now want England to win the Euro so that he goes to Manchester United?
Yes.
Why does that, why does that make...
we should all want England to win the Euros, because it's going to make this country a lot more... There's going to be a lot of happiness around the country, is my point on this. It makes this country a lot less miserable. Although all the blurts will bleat, but the blurts bleat regardless. Or they're either dead angry or they bleat. At least there'll be a nice positive vibe going around the place if England were to win.
I'm not backing that, but sure.
Yeah. Joe Gomez scores the winning goal in the Euros final. Imagine that.
I'm pleased for Joe Gomez. Yeah. I'd be equally pleased for Ibu Konate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's win-win. He's going to score. He's got to do it for us.
A quick reminder, if you enjoyed that show or any of the clips that we feature in here and you want those full shows in podcast or in video form, do head to redmenplus.com. Anyway, next up, Journo Insight with Neil Jones delved into the links that won't go away at the moment. They are Trent Alexander-Arnold to Real Madrid rumours. Here's what Neil had to say on those.
Move on to transfer topics now. There's been a pretty big one doing the rounds over the weekend, really. It kind of comes under what you've spoken about recently in terms of contracts and stuff like that. They kind of marry up together, because Vittorio Romano reported that Real Madrid were monitoring the situation revolving around Trent Alexander-Arnold, and that is in large part due to the fact he's out of contract in 2025, really. And we've spoken about contracts in recent weeks, of course we have. And I think it's fair to say, you know, we know about Michael Edwards being back in situ now, and we know about the soon-to-be sporting director in Richard Hughes, but it does feel like these rumblings are happening because there isn't new contracts on the table for them. And this type of story shouldn't come as a surprise, because when you've got somebody of the calibre and the ilk of Trent, and he is out of contract in nigh on 12 months, it does bring it all into sharper focus ever so slightly. The clubs of the manner and the calibre of Real Madrid will be sniffing around these types of situations.
I mean, Trent has Real Madrid the signing, as you could imagine, really. If you look at what they've been doing over the last few years, of the side they've been assembling, the players they've been buying, why wouldn't they like Trent? I think that's urgent. I mean, it's on the agenda here. Urgent. That's it now, isn't it? It's become, and the longer it goes on, of course, it leaves the room for these kind of things. And, you know, if it was to be a case, I don't think it will be, and I don't think it is, but if it was to be a case of Trent saying, I'm not signing a new contract, then this is the summer that you're going to have to do something about it. I don't think it's the same as necessarily as Salah or in the past Firmino or players like that, where you go, do you know what? I think we can let them leave on a free. I think Trent, the age of him and the sort of the value that he would have, I think you'd have to sell him if he didn't want to sign a contract. But having said that, I think he will sign a contract. I think now that the people are in place, you can sort of understand why it's been allowed to get to this stage a little bit. I'd still rather it didn't, but you can sort of understand if you haven't got the hierarchy in place. And obviously, there's obviously been some doubts about the manager, which have come to fruition now. Now that you've got the people in place, and that partnership in particular, like you mentioned, of Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes, you would expect the phone to be ringing, really. I would expect Tyler to be picking up his phone and getting an offer from Liverpool. And I think, you know, you couldn't say, oh, why would Trent want to go to Real Madrid? Because,
Real Madrid.
Yeah. But at the same time, you would also be saying, well, Liverpool have done nothing but amplified Trent and make him more important and more a part of their club and their future and a leader and a symbol. You know, they've promoted him to vice captaincy with the eye on him, obviously taking over from Van Dijk as the captain. He's the central hub, really, tactically, of the team, hasn't he? Or he has been. Of course, he's had his injury problems this year, but I don't feel like Trent could have too much complaints about what's been going on at Liverpool. He might have some questions about who's going to be the next manager and whatever else, but I think everything that Liverpool have done points to a future with Trent very much at the centre of it, and might literally be at the centre of it. Maybe that might be part of the conversations as we, you know, can I play in midfield? I think he'll stay, obviously. I think Liverpool will get the deal done, but of course, no surprise to hear Real Madrid are monitoring a situation like that, and I don't imagine they'll be the only club.
No, definitely not. No, but you kind of alluded to it there in not so many words. You think Liverpool will be relatively relaxed about the situation surrounding Trent?
I think it's hard to say relaxed because of the time aspect of
it. The minute you get towards 12 months,
I've not heard. Look, put it this way. I think it's quite significant that we're not hearing stories that Trent's frustrated with Liverpool or that he's what, you know, wants X and he's only getting this, or he's sort of annoyed by the length of time it's taken. We have heard, though, you know, Salah, there was a lot of rumours around Salah when he was going through his contract. I remember Jordan Henderson, yeah, when he got his contract, there was all of a sudden a story that, oh, you know, he's willing to walk away, and lo and behold, the contract comes. I think it's quite telling that that's not the case. It doesn't feel like, I think there must be an understanding on Trent's part that, look, who do you want to speak to, you know, like, about this? Now that's in place, I think we should expect Liverpool to sort of make their progress in that. And let's not forget, we're talking about, it's unusual to get to this stage, but Salah got to, I think it was the 1st of June, I think he signed his contract. Might have been even the 1st of July. Of the last year of his contract. So, you know, it doesn't have to be sorted by the end of the season. It doesn't have to be sorted by the transfer window. As long as it's getting sorted, I think you can be okay about it. I think it will be sorted. I think by the time the summer comes, I think Trent will have signed a contract and stay in Liverpool.
Okay, hopefully, yeah. It's definitely not unheard of to rumble onto this sort of stage within the final bit of his deal. Talk of sort of talismanic figures at Liverpool. You mentioned it there, Virgil van Dijk and Salah. I mean, you don't really get much more talismanic. And that sort of, again, it highlights the urgency of the situation, because we're not just talking about three run-of-the-mill, not that any Liverpool footballers are run-of-the-mill, but they're just three normal footballers. It's Virgil van Dijk, Mohamed Salah, Trent Alexander-Arnold. But on van Dijk and Salah, those situations don't feel quite as cut and dry to me as I felt. I mean, Van Dijk's come out recently and said he's more than happy to stay. He's just been named captain. You mentioned vice captaincy for Trent, but doesn't feel as simple.
I don't know. I don't see an issue with Van Dijk. I think you can make a... I don't know. The length of the contract will be obviously different to Trent. You know, I imagine Trent will be signing a 4 or 5 year deal. I don't expect Van Dijk to get that at 32, 33 in the summer, is he?
Yeah.
But I think you can be safe to say, if you add Van Dijk for the next, if you add the two on to his deal, I think you could be safe in the assumption that Van Dijk will still be useful, more than useful in the last year of that contract. You know, even just for his aerial ability and his leadership, and you know, he's still an elite centre back now. I don't see any reason why he won't be. You know, he plays a lot of games. He's had one muscle injury and obviously an impact injury in his Liverpool career. Other than that, he's played, and he's, you know, plays now. I think he's played 90 minutes of every league game this season, bar the red card. So he's not missed a game, not missed anything through injury. And so I think that feeds into him being worth a new contract. I think Salah's obviously different in the sense of, I think there's a greater market for him potentially, there's greater risk of interest from elsewhere and an offer that might be sort of worth considering. Obviously, I think he's another one really, his fitness record's unbelievable, but then you start seeing he gets a couple of muscle injuries. Does that tip the balance in the, you know, is that going to be a more regular thing? We saw it with a few players. Firmino would be an example of that, as he got to a certain, you know, Firmino was indestructible for a few years and then all of a sudden he got niggle, and he'd miss a few games every season. I don't personally think Salah will be that, but I think that makes it a little bit more difficult. And of course the figures probably as well around Salah. I mean, he was the most expensive player with contract in Liverpool's history last time he signed. I don't imagine he's after, you know, half of that. I think he would want something similar. So I think that maybe makes it a bit more complicated. But from a footballing sense, I don't think it is complicated. I think the footballing sense is, regardless of what happens, you three are playing for us next season. Mm. That would be my sort of view on it. And I know a lot of people would disagree with that and say, no, cash in if they're not going to sign the contract. I wouldn't. I would say you're playing for us next season regardless. And ideally, I'd want Van Dijk and Salah playing beyond that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to pick up on that, actually, because the Salah one in particular, let's focus on that. Obviously, there is, of course, the danger then, if he was to stick around next season without a new deal, there is the danger you let him walk away for free next summer, which is something Liverpool have done in the past with certain footballers. Obviously, we've seen Gini Wijnaldum, etc. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's not unheard of, even from a Liverpool's point of view. But with someone like Salah, I mean, I think we're all anticipating or expecting the Saudi interest at a minimum to come along again. And if we do start talking, you know, crazy figures like a 150, do you think there is a world whereby FSG, Liverpool, do turn that money down?
Well, he did last summer. I mean, albeit it seemed to emerge a little bit. The timing of it was a bit, I think, was a factor in that. It came quite late in the window, didn't it? I mean, some of the offers actually came
after our deadline.
I think it was actually on deadline day, one of them, wasn't it? So I could completely understand why they would turn that down if it was to come at the start of the summer. I always find it's very interesting when you get sort of a lot of people, they have certainty about Salah, don't they? We saw Richie Keys last year and, you know what he was saying, but I think we've seen me, though, this season. Oh, it's already done. It isn't, you know, because we told that last season, when, you know, it's all going to be agreed. So, but if Salah was to say, look, I'm not signing a new contract, and then an offer comes early in the transfer window, then, yeah, I can see a world where Liverpool say, okay, that's too much, you know. I personally wouldn't.
Yeah.
I personally wouldn't, and I know that I might make me in the minority. I would still go, well, what use is that money to us, really, in terms of we're not going to get someone better than you, who plays more games than you and scores more goals than you. But I can, yeah, there is a possibility that Liverpool do that most definitely. And I still keep going back to the Salah's sort of competitive spirit and sort of mindset. I don't see what's in it for him beyond finances and sort of, you know, maybe taking a little bit of the pressure off him to go to Saudi at this stage. You know, he's 30, early 30s, still playing at such a high level, huge player. I don't know what's in it for him.
No, that's a good point. It doesn't smack of somebody who wants less pressure, does he?
No.
So I get that entirely. I guess, you know, to spin it another way, not so much from his point of view, but from a Saudi Pro League point of view, it's clear to see why they'd be move heaven and earth to get him.
Yeah, and there's obviously the talk about De Bruyne, isn't there? There's another one. I mean, they would be two massively symbolic signings in terms of, like, we're basically taking the Premier League's two best players. Yeah. If you're doing that, we've already got Cristiano Ronaldo and Neymar and another. It makes more sense for the Saudi Pro League, certainly, than it would for Salah. You know, I would have a lot of sort of, it would be an underwhelming way for Salah to leave Liverpool, would be my sort of thing of, like, really, you know. Yeah. Not that it would diminish anything that he ever did for the club, but it would be one of them that, like, I don't know, I'd feel he'd jump too soon, would be my thing. I'd be like, you had 4 or 5 more years there, you could have won 2 more Champions Leagues, 2 more Premier Leagues, you could have gone on to another European club, and you know, I think Liverpool fans would go, okay, fair enough. I think if it would just feel a little bit like against what he's all been about over the last 10 years.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Interesting.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, do check out the full JNO Insight show, of course, on Redmen Plus. Next up, Dan Clubb. A little bit from left field, this one. Famed interviewer Jeff Shreves jumped on a call with Dan to discuss his upcoming podcast, but more importantly, his relationship, fractious or otherwise, with Jürgen Klopp.
You alluded to it earlier in your answer, how he's going to be a big miss to the Premier League, really, in that sense. I don't think we've really sort of taken that into account. Yeah, obviously Liverpool fans will miss him for what he's brought on a footballing sense, but I also think his communication, his interview style, and the way he handles himself, the way he navigates questions, because how often have we seen him approached about questions, not even in a football term sometimes. He seems to, even though it's in his second language as well, he has this way in which he finds the right words time and time again. I think we're really going to miss that. Obviously, there was the Super League debacle that he managed to navigate exceptionally as well. He truly is a brilliant communicator. There's no two ways about that. And you're right also, he's a competitor, he's a winner. So when you have just lost, you're going to expect a little bit of a backlash, a little bit of a feistiness to him, I guess, because that's
no
who he is.
At all.
No, yeah, no, it comes with the territory, doesn't it, ultimately? Yeah, exactly, yeah. Just on that then, in terms of the title race and stuff like that, it's one of the more fascinating ones you've been involved in numerous down the years, but here we are on the eve of domestic football returning, of course. 30 games left, really, to decide the title between us, Arsenal and Man City. It's really interesting. How do you see it?
I think it's magnificent. Honestly, I think this is one of the best title races we've had for years, because this is a genuine three-horse race. And you can make a case for any one of the three. So let's leave the Redmen until last. So you say Arsenal. They will be disappointed the way they fell away last season. This season, they're scoring more goals than anybody else. And they're conceding fewer goals than anybody else. The question mark over them is, do they have course and distance? And also, on paper, they've got arguably the toughest running, starting this weekend at Manchester City. So those are the pros, those are the cons. City, course and distance, been there, done it. They love it when everybody writes them off. It would be incredible to be the first team ever to win four on the trot. They've got the personnel. They've got an incredible coach. They've got the know-how. And that's got to give you confidence when you're on a roll. You just keep doing it. You know, you're the treble champions. Bring it on. The Redmen. I don't think... It's been an extraordinary season. And since Jürgen made his announcement, it seems to have, and I'm not going to say galvanised, actually, I might have changed my mind. It hasn't galvanised, because the youngsters coming in, the way that Liverpool have coped with adversity, I think Liverpool out of the three teams now, it almost doesn't matter who plays, because there's this energy, there's brio about whoever comes in, and they're a fabulous team. I also think, okay, you've got some tricky games. United away, Spurs, Villa. You don't know what you're going to get from them right now. But you would have to say the Jürgen Klopp factor could be the decider in this. The fact that it is, yeah. Okay, I'll do my Jürgen impersonation. If somebody was foolish enough to put that to him, he'd go, what, so if you go in the dressing room, the boys are going to say, yes, let's win this for Jürgen. And if I wasn't leaving, they wouldn't try as hard, which I love about him, because it's a literal answer. So, no, it doesn't stack up if you analyse it. But I just think it is a factor. I just think there is something about this last dance together with this particular coach and this group of players as well.
It's hard to avoid it ultimately, because it's pretty much since day one, since Jürgen Klopp arrived, that in the face of adversity, that never give up, that mentality monsters, that run through brick walls for Klopp and that makes you feel 10 feet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, could go on, has been the thing. So when you couple that and marry it up with the fact that Klopp's now leaving, the end is in sight of his tenure, it's hard to imagine that these players wouldn't go that extra mile for him, because you're only going to get one opportunity to go the extra mile for Jurgen Klopp, and that's coming to an end now. So I make you absolutely spot on that. I really do. Just on that then, we'll round up the Liverpool and the Klopp section by talking about the fact that, and I guess his tenure as a whole really during his time in the football club, you mentioned that he's been one of the great characters in the Premier League and stuff like that, and he's going to leave this football club in rude health. I think that's fair to say. Whoever comes in, whether it be Xabi Alonso, Roberto De Zerbi, Julian Nagelsmann, etc., etc., Liverpool Football Club, because of him, because of the youngsters, because of the work behind the scenes, because of the owners, etc., 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 looks in a wonderful, wonderful place again, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just want to just go back to talking about him and his strengths. He's a fantastic communicator, but he's also a superb tactician.
No.
And I think this season in particular, his substitutions have won games. And the way he thinks about the game, the way he changes games, is I think maybe he doesn't get enough recognition for that. Maybe, you know, we all focus on the big character, the big personality. You know, he's also darn good at what he does.
Yeah.
You know, it's important we don't, and I know we're guilty of that in the media, of how he's this big guy, this character, and they'll run through walls for him. But yeah, but he is also an extremely skilled and experienced coach. Mm-hmm. So that's why Liverpool are where they are. In terms of what he'd done, the transformation of the club, I think it's more than about results. It's about connecting the fans, understanding the city, understanding the political leanings of the city, the mentality of Liverpool fans. He absolutely, from day one, fitted in. You know, it was like a glove for him. It just the perfect fit for Liverpool. And there's no question that he has put the club, because ultimately, yes, of course, you've got Fenway. Yes, you have your directors of sport. You have your heads of recruitment. But at the centre of all of that, you've got a guy who is pretty much responsible for the direction that the majority of that takes. And he's done that. And you look at that crop of youngsters coming in as well. And, you know, the academy deserves great credit for not just the quality that's coming through, but just the way they conduct themselves. So humble, so professional, yeah. And the way they integrate with the senior players as well. Honestly, I sound like a Liverpool fan. It's a fabulous scenario at the moment at Liverpool. And also, this could be the most incredible end to the season. It could be absolutely incredible. I, for one, I do not think that the Carabao is the only trophy that Liverpool will end the season with.
No, I obviously certainly hope not. No disrespect to the Carabao Cup, of course. That was a wonderful day within its own right, especially when you consider the youngsters with which we did it with. It was truly remarkable. Another feat from Jurgen Klopp's side. And as you rightly say, it has been a marriage made in heaven, really, since day one. He completely bought into everything we're about. He's instilled this incredible belief in the group and the fan base as well, as you mentioned, like, doubters to believers was a real thing. It wasn't just words. It wasn't just a passing comment. It was genuinely what he made happen. And yeah, I've loved every single minute of it. I don't want it to end, if truth be told, but all good things must come to an end.
I think he's right, though. If he feels in his heart of hearts,
yeah.
If I started next season, he was just being honest. He it was almost though he would feel disingenuous if he started next season having registered or accepted in his mind he didn't have the same energy levels required to do the job to the optimum, which is his minimum requirement. So it's a big, it's a brave, and it's an extremely honest call to make.
No, absolutely, I agree with you. And again, it's testament to the man as well, because he doesn't want to go into it, as you say, knowing he can't give more than or less than 110% rather, because that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be right. He sees this job as being so important, so integral, that anything less than what the maximum is, he simply can't do it. And that's brilliant. That's, as much as it pains me to say it, I love that about him. And I love the fact he would never even imagine doing that, because it isn't right ultimately. Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Just going back. You were talking about the singing and the terraces.
Yes.
Can you imagine? You're at home last day of the season, aren't you?
Wolves at home. Again, it seems to always be Wolves at home.
Can you imagine if it goes to the last day, what that atmosphere will be like.
Well, you know, obviously we have the I'm so glad Jürgen is a Red, the Beatles sort of spin. And he has recently said that he doesn't want us to sing that until the game's over and we've won, because it was getting sung sort of mid-game and stuff like that. And he's come out and said, if all goes to plan and what we hope happens, the rendition of that on the final day of the season will be like nothing you've ever heard before. I referenced earlier how the Cop
Blow Anfield, the roof off.
Oh, Cop and Anfield used to sing Beatles songs in perfect harmony, seemingly, from the actual Cop. It might just be revisited on that day. You're absolutely spot on. I mean, I've been involved in some seismic occasions down the years at that football ground. That'll be like no other. It'll be like absolutely no other. It will be incredible, genuinely phenomenal. And fingers crossed it happens.
And of course, Chris Pajak and the deep dive with Josh Williams this week. Josh Williams has just released his book, and Chris Pajak decided to grill him on its contents. Do have a good old listen to this.
One of the chapters in my book is called Transforms. That's about Van Dijk and Alisson. They were two very, very expensive players for Liverpool, right? But the difference they had on Liverpool's goal difference, you know, Van Dijk from set pieces alone, we went from something like, I think the season before we got Van Dijk, we were like plus one or plus two from set pieces. Then his first full season, we were like plus 11 because we conceded fewer and we scored more. That alone is a lot of money. That's why he's worth a record-breaking fee. Alisson Becker as well, we've done the numbers on him. Just saves more than the average goalkeeper. So, again, goal difference-wise, he's just saving you points almost single-handedly on his own.
Now, again, you spoke about this in the book. You spoke about, I think it was, I can't remember exactly what it was about, but there was, let's say you've got each player has a 0.8. This player's going to add 0.8, and anyone between 30 and 60 or whatever is going to add 0.8 goal difference and blah, blah, blah. But the difference between the 80th and the 15th might be three goals, and that's a huge amount over the course of a season. It's how you identify those players that get you to the position. And that's what Jürgen did, isn't it, in the first instance. He concentrated on goal scorers our goal difference and then went back to the defenders.
Yeah, well, I think it's only natural, really, to look at that kind of dynamic and think, right, we're starting again, we've just got Jürgen Klopp in. How do we move forward here? How do we improve? And I think initially Liverpool were we improve on the attacking side using the transfer market, and we improve on the defensive side using the coaching on the training ground. So you got in the likes of Matip on a free, Clavan for like 3 million or something, Karius 6 million, Robertson 8 million. You know, it wasn't until Van Dijk comes in that we paid a fair amount for a defender back there. Whereas further forward, you know, you're getting in a Mane, a Salah, even Wijnaldum, Ox, all really attack-minded players who are going to have an impact on your goal scored, while Klopp and Linders hopefully can have an impact on your ability to defend at the opposite end. So it's always been about, for Liverpool, certainly while they were data-driven, maybe they'll start being data-driven again, but it was always about making transfer decisions, contract decisions, everything based on what each player is worth in terms of goal difference and consequently points, as opposed to like watching clips of him, realising he's good at doing step overs and he's quite popular and will sell a few shirts and getting them in on the back of that. You know, it's all about how do we climb the table with like tangible evidence. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, one of the things I say in the book is if you was to ask a man on the street or even a scout, how many points is Mo Salah worth over the course of a season? And anything is a guess. It's going to be a guess, an educated guess, and it'll probably be over-exaggerating it as well. The data scientists, the guys that I cover in my book, are the people who can actually put like a number on that. There's your actual evidence, there's your actual proof, and then you make decisions on the back of that evidence, whereas a lot of clubs just run based on just gut feelings and that.
Yeah. And moves on to the next sort of topic I wanted to discuss about it, really. It's overcoming critical bias in football. Mo Salah is a perfect example of this that you cite in Data Game.
Yeah.
A lot of people said he was going to be crap because he didn't get an opportunity at Chelsea.
How did you feel out of interest when we signed Salah? Would you worried about that?
I thought he was a backup for Mane.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I thought he was.
Yeah, well, even the likes of Robertson, like 8 million, just been relegated, Hull City. You know, you look at that and naturally think, like, he's been relegated, so he mustn't be good enough.
But that was the competitive edge that you speak about.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of addressing that bias and just flipping it on its head and actually challenging that is something that Liverpool, modern Liverpool, have done, whereas the typical football man, and those people have dominated the game for...
He's been a defender in a team that's got relegated and conceded loads of goals. He's a crap defender.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I think that's the kind of thinking that you get from a typical football man who's played the game for 20-odd years and wants to sign someone with experience and all that nonsense. Whereas if you sign a player just purely based on what he does on the pitch, forget about everything else. Forget about whether he drives a nice car. Forget about whether he...
wears gloves for training.
Yeah. Or in Ben White's case, for example, whether he watches football in the spare time or not. Who cares? It's about what you do. And this is why when it comes to like speaking about Henderson and Milner leaving, people talk about the leadership and all that. You will not miss the leadership if the lad who replaces the leader is just better at football. Your leaders will just naturally emerge anyway. The bottom line is having good players on the pitch. Not like all this intangible stuff that just like, for the most part, doesn't usually matter. And there's kind of a full chapter really, isn't he, dedicated to like the kind of thing that typically just people put far too much weight in that just doesn't matter. It's the same with Moneyball, the film, if anyone's ever seen it. Like judging players based on like the jawline and that and what his beard looks like and stuff. It's just nonsense, isn't it?
But Alisson is good because he's good looking.
Yeah, well, that probably comes into it. Like, I mean, that'd intimidate me if I was trying to finish past him. Like, I mean, get captain attention, don't he?
So, we briefly mentioned it there, but what are some of the market inefficiencies that Liverpool tried to overcome?
So, I think the relegated players is an obvious one. Just signing players that have been relegated, usually they are worth less, and there's a bit of a reduction on the price there. But an individual in a team can be really good still. Same with Salah, similar with Salah in terms of he looks like he's a Premier League flop, but I think Ian Graham actually said once that like he didn't fail at Chelsea, he failed to get on the pitch. There's a massive difference. So again, challenging that sort of thing, nobody, despite what he was doing at Roma, was even looking at him, really. Like Liverpool had a free run on him, which I found, you know, insane at the time. So there's just generally like major biases in football like that. Players maybe with bad reputations or something, or you know, just things that impact your decision to sign them. Some stuff matters, don't get me wrong, like the kind of policy Liverpool have to employ nice people. There's a different way of putting it, like, but that's something that comes into it. You want a good culture, obviously, but certain things, I'm trying to think of one on the top of my head, but some of the biased things that comes into, like, in fact, yeah, Van Dijk was avoided by Arsenal because he was too nonchalant in the way he defended. I mean, all right, sound. I mean, Matthijs de Ligt was apparently not signed or not chased or whatever by a club because his dad
got fat,
was too fat, and he assumed de Ligt would follow suit. Who are making these decisions, mate? You know what I mean? It's nuts, and I think Liverpool have been able to cut through that noise and apply an element of truth serum to their market and go from there.
So, what would be your best Moneyball signing? Because also, there have been a lot of mistakes during this, and it's been a steep learning curve, certainly in the early years of putting their systems into place and stuff, so we'll do worse later. But the best one for you?
It's out of two. I think it's got to be Salah. It's got to be Salah, I think. But when I think Moneyball, strict Moneyball on that, I also massively think of Andy Robertson as well, proper Andy Robertson. Because, you're applying those biases, realising that they're nonsense and moving past them. So there's an immediate start. Then on top of that, you're identifying what this player is doing on the pitch and how much it's impacting your ability to win, realising it's massive, and then looking at his market value and realising that it's much lower than it actually should be. 8 million for Robertson was genuinely outrageous. And, I mean, what was Salah, 35 million?
Something like that, yeah,
35. You know, 35 million for Mo Salah, mate. He's like one of the most dangerous players I've ever seen. You know, it offers more threat than any player I've ever seen on the right side, as opposed to Lionel Messi. Got the passing, the speed, the ability to threaten him behind. Left footer, which makes him even more unique. Goals without even performing well. You know, he's got it all. And I've lost count. How many goals did you got for Liverpool?
207.
200 odd, is it? Yeah. You know, to get that for 35 million for a player who was supposed to be a Premier League flop. And then Robertson, who's got, like, I think he's got the second most assists in Premier League history, 8 million on the back of getting relegated. Those are two proper Moneyball signings where, like, you've applied smart thinking to the topic and realised what the truth is compared to someone who's just a bit less inclined to do that and would have just looked at the surface level and thought they're not good enough, you know, that sort of thing.
What was the worst Moneyball signing for you? I agree with both of them, by the way, but I'm going to give my own worst.
Go on. I'd like to know yours first, because I think most people would say...
Andy Carroll.
Okay. I thought I was expecting Abby Keita.
No, I'm okay with that. It's just, he got injured. See, when he was on the pitch, he was good.
See, Andy Carroll, I wouldn't even go to count on that. Just simply because I don't know. He wasn't a data signer. Like, I don't think he was anyway. I mean, Camoli's admitted that, like, on selling Fernando Torres and that, he got wind of the Newcastle owner or chairman or something was willing to entertain a sale, panicked, bought him, and realised it was an absolute mess.
But you talk about it in the book, Josh. You then create an entire team around
exactly,
one player,
yeah.
And it's based off crosses into the box. And so the signing itself might not have been a money ball, but you've applied some kind of, we need to get crosses into the box of this lad. That's statistics, it's data.
Yeah.
Liverpool had the most crosses in the league that season, and Liverpool did shit.
Yeah.
So they've applied science to the signing.
Yeah.
Did that post or pre? And we were fucking crap.
Yeah, that's what makes Camoli so interesting. Like, because he's
very hit and miss.
Yeah, he's a weird character to analyse, because he deserves credit for something. I've always said this, because he was ahead of the curve in a way, in the way he was willing to embrace data and stuff and build a team based on data. But he built the wrong team because he identified a suboptimal playing style that was, you know, revolving around a player who, number one, weren't that good, and number two, got injured often. So, you know, absolute nightmare of it. But that whole period is one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, to be honest, because people look at Liverpool's modern resurgence and it looks like there's a clear before and after with Jurgen Klopp in the middle. Liverpool are clueless, don't have a clue what to do in the market, whatever. Klopp comes in, Liverpool are geniuses. So it looks like it's Klopp. A lot of it could be. A lot of it definitely could be. I don't want to discredit them or anything like that. But there's reasons why initially it just kind of didn't work. Like Camoli blowing a large portion of the budget on players who weren't really that good and they were from England and they were already expensive and all that. Rodgers coming in and not really...
trusting the data side of things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Firmino's the classic example there of the crossover, isn't it, between the data and the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he bought him, Bobby Firmino, he didn't want him. They end up getting Benteke at the same time. One goes on to have a great career and one doesn't.
Yeah, but the thing with Benteke, I don't even think he was ever that bad of a player, but I just never thought he was A, like a Liverpool signing, and B, a signing for a dominant side to make or an attacking side to make or anything like that. So I think the playing style issue for me was there with Benteke. You know, just what's the fit there? What is it you're trying to do there? And again, he was really expensive. So yeah, Liverpool had a period for a long time where the transfer committee, if you once had kind of two heads, you know, and one of them was Rodgers' brain and the other one was the committee's brain, with Edwards not having as much power as he does now, and Ward was there and Fallows and all that stuff, and there was just conflict between them, and that's what Klopp tackled when he came in. Klopp offered the alignment, you know, everyone singing from the same hymn sheet, and on the back of that, everyone who arrives in the building performs for them and does well.
Who's your worst Moneyball signing then?
I think it's Carroll if we're counting them, But if I don't know if he counts as a Moneyball signing, so I don't know. Keita is up there, but not because of what he delivered on the pitch, though. But I think when he was on the pitch, I do think he was generally fine. And I do think he helped Liverpool's goal difference in terms of creating stuff in attack, stopping things in defence. I do think he did that to a good level. The problem with Keita is he obviously suffered from persistent injuries. And one of the reasons why Liverpool bought him is because of his athletic quality. That was what gave him the ability to be everywhere. Yeah, and I think he gradually lost that just through injuries. And, you know, by the time he left, mate, he looked about 34. You know, when he went, he was 28 still. You'd expect him to be still really good at 28. But I said in the book, we ended up seeing in like a watered-down version of what Keita was at his peak.
There you go. That is the Red Men Weekly Roundup for another week. As always, if you want to go and check out those full shows, whether you want them in video form or you want to get them in your podcasting app on the go, head to redmenplus.com and sign up. We're on the countdown to one of the most amazing ends of a Liverpool season ever, and we're going to have it covered from every angle. So yeah, fill your boots on redmenplus.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.